Welcome to the program, friends. This is your host, your friend, your beacon in times of darkness, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. And it is Good Friday, 2 days before Easter. We're doing the show today in the morning, so you'll be delighted to find our program here in your inbox a few hours earlier than anticipated. So you're welcome. Consider this today's Easter miracle. Now, you want to know what the number one biggest story has been this week? Not Stormy Daniels. See, everybody right now, that was Sunday night. She did her interview, and everybody, that's the easy thing to talk about. What are the implications for Trump? Is Mueller going to attach himself to this story? What role? How is Trump going to be led to perjure himself? And will this end up becoming Donaldus Magnificus's own Monica Lewinsky moment? All of this being wildly discussed and parsed out, analyzed. And I'm just giving it the shoulder shrug because on Monday, I awoke to some very interesting mumblings, I'll say this, from reputable sources, claiming that Kim Jong-un, a.k.a. Rocket Man, the despotic leader of North Korea, had made a secretive journey by train to China, to Beijing, presumably to meet with President Xi. Now, let me tell you why this is important. Everything regarding North Korea right now is important because no one, not me, not you, wants to get blown up in a nuclear war. So there, that's why it's important. The other reason it's important is because we are seeing dramatic moves finally being made by the U.S. that are rankling, in a good way, powerful regional players in Asia, a.k.a. the Chi-Coms, the Chinese. They are, look, under Obama, 8 years of Obama, what did we have? We had nothing but year-over-year expansion of Chinese dominance in the Pacific Asian Rim. This is a problem. This is a problem because last time I checked, we fought a bloody and devastating war to establish our dominance in the Pacific. And China's been quietly making moves, which Obama and the Obama administration allowed them to get away with, things like establishing those sea-based islands, you know, taking over territory and gradually expanding its reach in the region. So this trip, do you know why Kim Jong-un, our favorite potbelly dictator, was in China? Different theories. I have mine. Look, the Chinese are scrambling because Trump beat them to announcing a meeting with Kim. To understand Chinese mentality, they see themselves right now as the undisputed power player in the Asian region. And the truth is they are. Okay? I mean, as far as military spending, military might, number of people, economy and everything, they're the 800-pound gorilla of Asia. But also, understand this. What President Xi came to power in 2012, a year after Kim Jong-un took over after his father passed away, the two have never met. And why? Because China is a slow moving beast, okay? Everything the Chinese do is very slow, very measured, for better or for worse. And right now, who is China's greatest adversary? We are. We always have been. And any denial of that is, I think, Pollyannish. North Korea, in the grand scheme of things, is a pawn. They are a pawn for us. They're a pawn for China. China certainly has been using North Korea for years as this protectorate puppet that they purport to be able to control to some extent, I believe they can because of the enormous amount of financial backing that they give them. But the Chinese have always used North Korea, to get what they want from us. Let me tell you, meeting with the U.S. Okay, you give us, you Americans, give us the Chinese what we want on this trade deal over here. And we're going to help you with this rogue nation. We've got an inside line to those crackpot Kims. This conversation, this is not fiction. I'm not pulling this out of thin air. Retired diplomat after retired diplomat has spoken on the record about conversations like this taking place. And it is a smart move. If you want to negotiate with somebody, what you do is you put a wild card over off to the side. In this case, North Korea. You say, yeah, they're building a nuke. But you know what? We can help you stop it. We can put pressure on them. So if you go back to the Xi summit that happened back at Mar-a-Lago, this is some months ago, rewinding the clock to when Trump and Xi met here in the U.S., what happened? Do you remember Trump sent some missiles right in the middle of everything? Flex some military muscle. Remember this? We analyzed it here, and I said, well, this is all deliberate theater. But in that meeting, President Xi of China, promised Trump the usual Chinese line, which is we're going to help you control North Korea. And Xi, like others before him, or him with Obama at least, because he'd been in office for most of Obama's tenure, assume that Trump would play the same game. And Trump is not, because what happened since then is what? North Korea has been going off the rails. They continue to build nukes. And so what did Trump do? In a series of coordinated, in my view, absolutely coordinated moves, a number of things have happened. One, enormous tariffs placed on China. Now, you heard all the naysayers. This is bad. This is terrible. We're going to start a trade war. Okay, well, who loses in the trade war? Yes, we lose in the trade war. Who else? The Chinese. Where is China's biggest market? The U.S. If they don't have our market, what happens to, in my view, in the view of many economists out there, a very fragile economy? Well, I mean, they've got a lot of power behind it, but there's a bubble. There's a bubble building. No worse way to burst a bubble than to lose your biggest external foreign market, okay, for export goods. Can't do that. So the Chinese are getting nervous over these tariffs and have begun quietly to negotiate with the Trump administration. We've seen some results from that. Then what happens? Last week today, John Bolton, it's announced, Bolton is coming in as national security advisor. I promise you, that in North Korea, in the government buildings of Pyongyang, in Beijing, in China, in their various government buildings, there was an all-out run on adult diapers when this was announced. I don't know, but run on adult diapers, I guess. It is what it is. They're freaking out. And why are they freaking out? Because Bolton is a hawk. He gets it. He understands you never trust a communist. You understand that when you're dealing with despotic dictators, totalitarian regimes, it's a trust but verify system. China, when the move was announced, when it was announced that Trump would be meeting with Kim, I guarantee you, was seething in anger. Was seething because they see themselves as the regional player. And they hadn't yet hosted Kim. They were all of a sudden left out of the loop. They didn't know. And that is why Bolton comes in. And now they are doubly crapping bricks. And a hastily arranged trip is put together. No one knew about it. And I understand some of this is security. But it was so secretive. You know, he got on a train. You know the story about this train? This train is so bulletproof and so heavy that it travels at 37 miles an hour. You want to take a trip from Pyongyang to Beijing going 37 miles an hour? It's going to take you 25 hours. And Kim Jong-un has a number of planes and, you know, an Air Force One and private aircraft and that type of thing. There's a reason why this trip was on the down low, on the QT, and very hush-hush. And it wasn't just because of security. The Chinese want to remain a powerful player. They wanted to be able. It must have been a condition. The condition to meet would be that the U.S. and everybody be left out of the loop. They wanted to get to Kim first. So the way I read all of this is Trump is appending the old way of doing business with China and with North Korea. And it's good because the way it matters to you and I is these despots, these nuclear thugs, right, that want to arm themselves and perhaps at some point wage war. The only thing they respond to is strength and being called out on their own BS. I remember even as a kid when the Cold War was going on and studying the nuclear disarmament talks that had been going on for years between the West and the USSR, and thinking what a load. I mean, as a child, I understood it. My parents would explain it, of course, to me with their commentary, which was wise. You really think that when we went to the Soviets and said, "All right, Ruskies, here's the deal. We will get rid of 100 nukes, and you're gonna get rid of 20." And we thought. The ignorance of the American left has always been that the other side is going to play according to the rules because they so desperately want to believe in the goodness of these left-wing regimes. This has nothing to do with left or right. North Korea is in a self-preservation game. For them, they are looking around themselves, and the Chinese have tried for years to convince them to follow the Chinese model, to liberalize the economy. And their answer has been, my understanding for people who have been present in meetings with predecessors of Kim, with his father and grandfather, they've always looked at it and said, listen, great, it might work in China, but look at what happened when they liberalized in Eastern Europe. Look at what happened when they liberalized in the Soviet Union. Name me one of those leaders that is still in power. Of course, none are. So the I always say this, the threat from North Korea is not as severe as we make it out to be. North Korea, they're for all their acts of crazy, they're a very rational regime. Their motivation is to remain in power, and they've looked at what's happened to Saddam Hussein, what happened to Gaddafi. They've looked to examples in history of totalitarian leaders bending to American demands to disarm. It hasn't worked very well for those guys. So this is their entire purpose to move forward is self-preservational. The question here is China. That's the real issue. Is there an opening here to begin to cut China out? And I don't know if, look, I don't know. I'm not inside White House meetings. I can only judge it from the outside, looking in, and what would I do knowing what I know? And that would be exactly my move. I would want to cut China out because that gives us that much more leverage against them. It removes one of the big carrots that they've always waved at us in every negotiation that we've had. And China, China's a very dangerous country. And you see this, too, right now with the evolution of the Chinese communist system. There's a greater return toward authoritarianism. You saw that President Xi has done away with term limits, meaning they're now calling him Emperor Xi, that he will be there, presumably for quite a long time. But I'm telling you, this is an example where if you are strong and you meet strength with strength, you face down the bully, you get the bully to back down, and you begin to reach some sort of equilibrium. And this is good for all of us, right? This is a good place to be for our security, for our economic well-being, coming up with a better trade deal and a better relationship with China. And also for our regional strength. I don't like to see the sacrifices of our World War II veterans go to waste. And you can't understand. We beat the biggest power in Asia in the 1940s, Japan. And instead of maintaining our position there, in some respects, we've given up an enormous amount of territory to China. And we funded it with these ridiculous trade deals that give China everything and leave us with shuttered factories. It's not that easy, but I don't want to oversimplify. But it is, we have definitely given up turf. All right, Lindsey Graham, Trump critic, actually agrees with me on this issue. I'll have that and more when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Don't go anywhere.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
I almost fell out of my chair. I was watching Fox News and I saw Lindsey Graham talking to Martha McCallum. This was on Tuesday, just as word was beginning to spread through the wind of Kim Jong-un's secretive trip to Beijing. And of course, this was right on the tail of us figuring out or learning that John Bolton would be joining on the White House team as national security advisor. And this is Lindsey Graham's take on this. Listen closely.
I think he has got North Korea's attention. He's convinced China that he's serious, and he's got them to the table. Nobody else was able to do it. Jimmy Carter is upset with John Bolton. We've tried it the Jimmy Carter way for about 30 years. Let's try it the Donald Trump, John Bolton way. Fire and fury worked when it came to North Korea. We've got the best chance in the last 30 years to end the North Korean nuclear program and maybe sign a peace treaty with North Korea, China, and South Korea to end the Korean War.
Yeah, and this is nuts. You know, a lot of Americans don't understand that we are still in a state of war with North Korea. We signed an armistice. An armistice is not a peace treaty. So we have an active war. Presumably liberals like the concept of ending war, though they usually go about it in very defeatist, pathetic ways. And that is exactly the foreign policy a la Carter. So I don't, right now, the real estate mogul from Manhattan is certainly has a different and more successful style at international relations than the peanut farmer from Georgia. But who out there, of course, by the left is constantly promoted as the end all be all diplomat, greatest diplomatic gift? Carter, John Kerry. I mean, these are the people that the left goes to. Madeleine Albright, Hillary Clinton. They show up to every negotiations, and the first word vomit that comes out of them is, "We are so sorry. We are so sorry for all the bad things America has done." It is almost literally a page out of communist propaganda. Of course, North Korea. I mean, in North Korean schools, they teach that America started the Korean War. Delusional. It's not delusional. It's concerted. It's done that way by design. Oh, I also neglected to say, talking about North Korea here, one reason for this hasty trip of Kim Jong-un visiting Beijing, and I say it was hasty because It by no means was a grand reception. I don't be fooled by the pictures of them walking, through the great, People's Hall. And the reception that Kim got in Beijing was nothing like the state visit that Trump got when he went. Just to kind of give it for scale. And this is supposed to be China's big ally in the region. They're not. Kim was being called on the carpet by Beijing. They're upset with him for not playing his role. This is almost like when in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. You know the movie? You have Steve Martin plays this American con artist going through Europe, and he ends up meeting up with Michael Caine, who's a suave con artist who deals on a totally different level in millions of dollars. And he and Steve Martin wants Michael Caine to teach him his ways. It turns into a futile effort because Michael Caine is just a basic, stupid American. So they decide that the best way to utilize them in this act is to have Steve Martin play a retarded person. Well, here it is. North Korea has been playing the retard. There's no other way to put it. And this game has benefited China very well. And suddenly Kim is making his own moves. And China's going, whoa, back up, Ruprecht. You've gone off the reservation. Bilateral talks, right? They're planning talks with South Korea. Bilateral talks with South Korea where the U.S. is going to be involved. Are you kidding me? This is China talking to North Korea. Not a comfortable trip for Kim. They put him in a back room and took a rubber hose to him. And if there's anybody that can do that, it's China. Because without China, lights go out even more than they already are in Pyongyang. All right, don't go anywhere. Ann Coulter fighting with the Trumpster, denouncing him even. My thoughts on that when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. Quick correction there from the last segment. The movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Michael Caine plays the suave British high-level con artist. Michael Caine, that's who he is. Now, Steve Martin plays the stupid American who then can't be elevated up to Michael Caine's level. So they decide that he becomes this. You couldn't even do this now. You couldn't have a movie where somebody acts like they're mentally retarded. You couldn't do this. You get a protest outside. You have David Hogg show up and denounce you. So, yes. And then he played Ruprecht the Monkey Boy for a period of time. And anyway, watch the movie. It's a classic. 1986, 87, something like that. All right. Ann Coulter is mad at Trump because of the budget bill. That's my take on it, because her anger came out last weekend after Trump, 11th hour, decided to sign the omnibus budget. And, you know, of course, if you heard the show last week, you know I was not happy about it myself either. I'm not an unconditional Trumpist. First, a word about two-party politics. You never get the perfect candidate who's perfect all of the time. Correct? In other words, political choices are never made in a vacuum. You never say, oh, my perfect candidate is X. All right, well, that's great. Now show me in this field of losers who they're exactly representing. Well, it's that guy, but more of this and less of that, of course. You are picking every time you go to the vote, in an election, you always pick the least worst option. That's what elections are about. It is very important as a citizen, and certainly for me as a political observer and a political commentator, to not get too emotionally invested in any one candidate. Because, well, we do this retrospectively. We lionize people like Reagan, for example. But in the moment, Reagan did things that I disagree with profoundly. Doesn't mean that on balance he wasn't a great president, wasn't better than George H.W. Bush, wasn't better than Clinton, was not a great. But what it means is that there are always going to be things that happen that you're not happy with. Now, Coulter unloaded at a speech, I think it was at a Republican, college Republican meeting on Saturday, and then went on to continue her diatribe on Wednesday talking to Lou Dobbs. And this is their exchange.
Yes, we might have wanted a more elegant person to make these arguments. We're voting for him for the policies. And then I realized...
Well, sure as hell didn't. Millions of other Americans didn't want an elegant...
Again, was halfway through the sentence. And then you realize an elegant person wouldn't have said the things he was saying. It was precisely that he was so coarse that allowed him to make these... say these... incredibly courageous things. He didn't care what Manhattan elites thought of him. As soon as he gets to the White House, suddenly all he wants is the approval of the Manhattan fancy people. He sure didn't care for the 18 months he was running. So the shallow, coarse ignoramus, yes, it was a selling point because he didn't care what people thought of him. Now all he wants is for Goldman Sachs to like him.
I think Ann Coulter's totally nuts. I mean, I... Do you... All he wants is Goldman Sachs people to like him. He just fired Gary Cohn. Okay? He just dropped McMaster like a hot potato, who is, by all accounts, a very much inside the Beltway guy, and brought in an unconventional but very realist-oriented player like John Bolton. I'll analyze this after the break, because I think there's some important observations that are important to talk about as we move forward through the remaining years of the Trump presidency. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Radio, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, texting here with my wife. Bad news. My little girl, Ava, my youngest, developed a cavity some time ago from what I assume are bad habits, right? She's eating candy and not brushing her teeth. The good news is this cavity is on a baby tooth, right? So it's not going to be there forever. And even the dentist said, you know, we could kind of let this be. You don't have to necessarily fix it. And my wife, both and I said, no, you got to fix this, because we want it to be a bad experience for her. You know, we want the idea, you know, they have to drill. That drill is terrible, right? In your mouth, and you feel particles of your tooth flying around. Oh. I mean, it's enough to make you want to brush your teeth four times a day. So. That was the objective. I just got a text that she loved it. She had the best time, loved it, happy as can be, got to pick out a toy, and thinks it was all just some great giant game. Life is good when you're 5 years old. That's just a parenting fail, right? You think something's going to be a bad experience for your kid. They're going to learn their lesson. And then they just all colossally backfires. Okay. Ann Coulter is disillusioned with her emperor god, quote-unquote, Trump. I think she called him that at one point, emperor god, something like along those lines. God emperor, was that it? Okay. Maybe that's part of the problem. I think if you go into thinking that your president, your political savior, is just that, is a god emperor, a savior, and is somehow going to solve everything. You're setting yourself up for disappointment. This all has to do with giving in to her. If you go through her Twitter feed, it's very specific. Carrying water for Mitch McConnell, carrying water for Paul Ryan, basically doing anything that they say. And she's upset about this omnibus bill. Now, I had an email last week from a listener, Heather. And I think this email now it's the right time to bring it up. Heather, you were asking me if I could explain this military spending component of the omnibus bill, mentioning that that we just celebrated spending money, secured military spending 2 years for 2 years earlier. And now we had another bill, right? So we've been told twice now we've got to secure funding for the military. Where do I start? So one, that's a very good question, Heather. And it relates to, in my opinion, an answer to some of my anger last week about this omnibus bill getting put in. What answer did Trump say, by the way? He said, my hands were tied. I had to fund the military. Now, the way I see it is that I looked the previous bill, it seems, authorized spending, right? Authorized spending, but didn't appropriate the cash to spend to the military. And this bill actually gives them the cash, releases the funds, so to speak. But there's another part of the story that I don't know. I'm just putting this out there. Did you hear the whisperings about Trump saying, I can fund the wall using the military budget? So you got Ann Coulter seething, frothing at the mouth, saying Trump's not going to build the wall. He didn't get funding for the wall. Instead, he just funded the military, which the Democrats are always eventually willing to do. And then he funded all these other Democratic pet projects. Same things I said last Friday. So now, with a week's reflection, I've been asking around, can Trump fund border wall construction from the military budget? And the answer almost certainly is yes. Now think about this. If that ends up happening, tell me, wasn't that just the smartest, coolest, and most diabolical end run around both congressional Republicans and Democrats? Hell yeah. So I think we got it. Let things play out. This is the same thing. People cursing at Trump for agitating North Korea. And all of a sudden, he's getting everybody to the table. He's got China on their heels. Let these things play out. Might turn out he's a lot smarter than CNN gives him credit for. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Do you know any vegans? So you know what a vegan is, right? No animal product, byproducts, no, certainly no meat. But also, you can't have any dairy. I mean, it's basically a life without joy is what being a vegan is. So there's this restaurant called Antler, and it is, where is it? In Toronto, Canada. It's called Antler Kitchen and Bar. And as you might suppose, with a name like Antler, they serve various wild meats, game meats, you might say, such as venison, wild boar, etc. I like venison a lot. Very lean, very delicious. Good with I don't know, some lingonberries and that type of thing. A little wine reduction sauce. As you can tell, I'm not a vegan. Oh my gosh, can you imagine life without cheese? Ice cream? Robbie's putting a gun to his head. Careful. I hope you have a permit for that thing. They're coming to take that away. No, it's just his hand. He's just doing a hand gesture. Yeah, it'd be terrible. So this restaurant was getting harassed, boycotted, and various protests there of these militant vegans. These eco-terrorists. And the chef finally said, enough is enough. If it were in Quebec, if it were in Montreal, he would say, ça suffit. But he wouldn't have done that because I don't think they're as brave over there. Anyway, so this Toronto chef had enough of this and began to butcher a deer in front of horrified vegan protesters. I wonder how many of them fainted. Because if you're already a little depleted from not getting all the proper nutrients, I assume that you're prone to fainting spells. So, yeah, you're low in iron. Do you know what else he did to agitate them? He put up a sign in front of the restaurant that read, "Venison is the new kale." Oh, this is just amazing. I love people who are clever and fighting back against the social justice warriors. And that really leads me to where I want to go here in the next monologue here, opening monologue for the next hour. This march, this gun control march that occurred last weekend all over the U.S., but the most prominent one happened in Washington, D.C. I am just blown away how mind-numbingly stupid these people are. There's been some bright kids in history. One that comes to mind is Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Not David Hogg. No, not David Hogg. And I'll get into this because I've got a lot to say. In fact, producer Robbie has compiled a montage, one of his famous montages, of Hogg saying some wonderful things. So we'll play that for you. So you don't want to miss this. But yes, if you are a chef and are fed up with vegan protesters, just find an animal carcass and begin hacking into it. And just remember, you got to ask yourself, this is the motto, right? If you're facing a crisis, what would Trump do? We're going to make some bracelets. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
now, as an added spot tonight, I just wanted to let you guys know that we are subjugating our entire show to Sam Nation because apparently he's right and the rest of everyone is wrong.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live, not live. Still not live, but we will be live at some point, somewhere, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Fantastic to have you, and I'm glad that you found us here on the internets. I have to say the one thing that's nice about the podcast is I can kind of do it whenever I want. And that what I try to do here is be upfront about when I'm doing it. And just get it to you as soon as I do it. And we switched to Friday last week. I think that's going to work really nicely for us now moving forward. But like today, I'm doing it a little bit early because it's Good Friday and I want to spend some time with the family this afternoon. And I can do that. And then all that means is you get the podcast in your iTunes or wherever a little bit earlier. Well, the only problem is if we have breaking news this afternoon, and then that's a bummer. But that would happen on a live show too. You know, you get off air, and suddenly you know what hits the fan, and there's stuff happening. You go, get me back on. So anyway, this happens, and this is something that we're doing this. All right. What do you make of this movement, this new gun control movement being led by these student activists? There's a difference between style and substance, right? We all understand. There's a substantive part of the argument that fundamentally bothers me because I'm a constitutionalist. And I think that the left's analysis, the pro-gun control analysis of the Second Amendment, is just wrong. It's not only inartful, it's wrong. And if you take an originalist view of the Constitution like I do, you realize that the Second Amendment is very specific and had a very specific intended purpose, which it continues to fulfill in its present form and interpretation. But let's put substance aside for a minute, because I want to talk about style. We are a country that, under our fine constitution, has been able to evolve, mature, and develop in ways that are at times uncomfortable. Now, I'm going to say this. When we talk about, let's say, the civil rights movement, 1950s and 60s, and you look at the prominent figures of that movement. First of all, for starters, the Constitution was on their side. Can we acknowledge this? Right, the Constitution was on their side, but culturally, they're fighting an enormous headwind. Right, the concept of integrated schools, for example, completely unthinkable in certain places in the country. But the movement was led by people who, for the most part, were incredibly respectful and decent. It was their decency that won over even some of their opponents. The objective of any movement, however, is not to win over your diehard opponents. If I am David Hogg et al., this band of clowns right now that are taking over and congesting my time with cable news. And I look at these guys, and I was going to give them some advice. I was going to sit them down and say, will you listen to a grown-up for 10 damn minutes? And let me tell you what you need to do in order to be successful. The first thing I would tell them is you're not here to win over the NRA. You're not going to win over the NRA. You're not going to win over me, who has a small arsenal in my house. I'm not going to do that. You're here to win over the flabby middle of this country. That's the way every political discussion works. That's the way every political campaign works. It's like the gay rights movement. Okay, you're not here. You're not going to win over the grandma that goes to church 3 days a week. Okay, it's a non-starter. Okay, but you're here to win over the center of the country that kind of is like, what's up with these gay people? What are they doing? Okay, all right, let's live and let live. I got it. The way you win over the people in the center is not by being an A money money hole. You are not going to win over these people by being a loudmouth, by being a disrespectful punk. If you are speaking in the language of children, if you are dismissing your elders as out of touch, incompetent boobs, you're going to lose them. And FYI, David Hogg and others, those are the people that go to vote, idiots, right? Those are the people that go to vote. Your people do not go to vote. Your people are too busy playing Nintendo or video, whatever the hell those platforms are. What do kids play these days? I should know. I've got a, yeah, my kid plays Overwatch. What is that? What is that on? I don't know. Whatever. They're too busy on social media worrying about that Instagram and that Facebook, not Facebook, but that Snapchat. And oh my gosh, look at what, oh my goodness, her hair. This is what your contemporaries care about. All right. You get my point. Broad appeal is the name of the game if you want to win any type of political movement within a democracy. Your objective is to accumulate as many votes behind you as possible. The only real political change that you can affect, if you don't resort to terrorism, is by getting people to vote. And to vote based according to some sort of ideology or some sort of comprehensive platform that you put forth or you advocate for. So here is a producer Robbie montage. And Robbie, let me ask you this. When you're putting together this montage of Hogg saying all these things, were you trying really hard to look for stuff that was outrageous, or was there plenty of material to choose from? Way more than you can use. Okay, so and we've tried to edit out the bad language. There is, at one point, we did not bleep out the word a money money. He does not use a money money because he is not clever. I am clever, which is why I'm your host. Anyway. Just listen to this. Take it all in. Soak it up. And tell me if you think you would find this person persuasive, even if he was advocating for a position you agreed with 100%. Roll the tape.
It just makes me think what sick f***ers are out there that want to continue to sell more guns, murder more children, and honestly just get reelected. When your old-ass parent's like, I don't know how to send an iMessage, and you're just like, give me the f***ing phone, and you get it done in 1 second. Sadly, that's what we have to do with our government, because our parents don't know how to use a f***ing democracy. Our policymakers need to define that, because I'm not going to. I'm f***ing 17. I shouldn't have to. Literally any action is what comes next. Just standing up and saying f***. No, we don't want to see any more of our friends be murdered.
After we come back from spring break, they're requiring all of us to have clear backpacks. Many students want their privacy. They're having essentially their First Amendment rights infringed upon because they can't freely wear whatever backpack they want.
What type of person are you when you want to see more f***ing money than children's lives? What type of f***ing person does that? It's also been great advertising for me in terms of acting because I don't give a f*** what people say about me, but they've quadrupled my Twitter following and they've done a great job of that.
You're an idiot. I'm speaking directly to you, Mr. Hogg. You're a moron. And you're not a moron even by what you say. You're a moron based on how you're saying it. See, you know, I think somewhere, people think that Trump is rude, right? And that he's lost people. But they don't realize that it's true. Actually, people do want honesty. They do want sometimes to be told the cold, hard truth, even if it's in a slightly vulgar way. But Trump is a 70-year-old man who has done stuff in his life. You know, he has achieved something in his life, and he has just a wee little bit of more of gravitas behind him than a 17-year-old punk kid from, you know, the armpit of Florida. Sorry for all of you from Broward County. It doesn't exactly look like the navel of civilization. The most terrible thing I hear him saying over and over again are disrespectful words at his parents' generation. This is a child who has, although he's living in Parkland, from what I can tell, nice middle class area, attends a nice middle class school, has textbooks, has a nice building, has good teachers, has free education, nice roads. He's got an iPhone for his Twitter account, which is all he gives a crap about. Now, don't worry, I'm going to get to the substance of his arguments, too. That's a big part of it, because you saw that Justice John Paul Stevens wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times on Wednesday, I think, talking about how we should do away with the Second Amendment. That's a big part of this, and I'm going to get to that, I promise. But first, stylistically, this is so horrible. So after his various pronouncements, this is how you know. Not everybody agrees with me, right? That Hogg and others, that these kids are I think, shooting themselves in the foot, pardon the pun, by being total a-holes. This is Sean Penn actually saying that these Parkland kids are giving him hope. Listen to this.
Not only are they stating their case with incredible sobriety and articulate words, but in such an inclusionary way where you feel like there are reasonable people who have been on the other side of this conversation who are going to listen to these kids.
No!
And you think to yourself, thank God. And now, if these kids and this movement of these kids will get together with people representing other issues, well, that's going to affect the ballot box, and that's going to affect the culture. And then I might write a less dystopian book.
Sean Penn has spoken. Oh my God, can he please go back to spooning, you know, Chavez? If only cancer were catching. Sweet baby, you know who. They're not only are they stating, talking about the Parkland kids like David Hogg, their case with incredible sobriety and articulate words, but in such an inclusionary way. Let me read to you here what David Hogg was saying. When your old A-money-money parents are like, I don't know how to send an iMessage, and you're just like, give me the effing phone, and you get it done in 1 second, that's what we have to do with our government because our parents don't know how to use an effing democracy. Who the hell are you to talk about a generation of people that have where do I even get started? Who have provided for you, who have given you life, who have done things other than wake up, eat cereal, and poop. I am so upset. And Laura Ingraham apologizing. You heard about this scandal, right? She called him a name or something, sent out a tweet. I didn't follow it because it said something. And David Hogg attacked her and started an advertising boycott. Do you know when, by the way, Laura Ingraham lost more advertisers? When she apologized. You don't apologize. You double down. This guy is an a-hole. And he deserves to be mocked. He deserves to be ridiculed. And he deserves to be criticized. Do I sound upset? Yeah, well, I am. Thanks for asking. Now, when we come back, I will get to this John Paul Stevens op-ed piece. John Paul Stevens, thank goodness, retired from the court. He did so during Obama's tenure to make way for a younger justice. This is a common arrangement. When a liberal thinks that the clock is running out on them, a liberal justice or a conservative justice, too, they will retire. Sandra Day O'Connor did this during George W. Bush's term. So you have they make way so you can get a younger person because you do not what you don't want to do. If you're a conservative, you don't want to die when Obama's in office. And if you're a liberal, you don't want to die when Trump is in office. I don't know what the hell Ruth Bader Ginsburg is doing because she looks like death like right now. And she's extra gamey. I don't know if there's been some rumors that she's, you know, hanging on. This is great. I mean, the thing is she loves her job, and I get that. I love my job. You know, if you love your job, you understand you don't want to leave it. And I know people who are – I actually know somebody in their 80s working every day, going to the office and loving it. Okay, that's fine. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a great example of how the left screwed itself by believing its own nonsense, believing the polls, believing the New York Times, believing Politico, and all the conventional wisdom out there that Trump would lose and Hillary would win. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg thought she had time. And then Trump won. I promise you, if you heard a scream, if you heard one scream on election night, it was Grandma Ginsburg. giving up the ghost. All right, I'm going to talk about the substance of this. This is now we move to the real discussion on the Second Amendment and this movement and why all of this is just noise. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rogowski, Sam Nation, very much alive, though not live, here on a slight delay on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Okay, it's Friday morning, and we're getting up closer to noon now. That is where that little grumble in my stomach is coming from. All right, so the gun control debate. Do you remember when Obama made that throwaway comment during one of his agonizing pontifications about how difficult it is to get anything done in Washington? And he said something to the effect of, well, if we just could really just not have this Constitution the way it is, it's so restricting. You really can't get things done the way you want because this stodgy old document, peskily, interferes with my plans to effect a Bolivarian revolution. All right, so, no, I'm paraphrasing. I recognize that. That's what he was thinking, though. He did say, do you remember this, Robbie? You remember this. And that's what he's thinking. Because Obama's a smart enough guy to understand constitutional law. He understands not only the Constitution, understands there are different readings of the Constitution. And the more progressively liberal you are, typically, you tend to want to read the Constitution in a way, in a more flexible way. And yeah, it's more complicated than that. I'm not going to get into the civil libertarians. A lot of liberals tend to read the Constitution more strictly when it comes to civil liberties, but even that's not always true. So there's my approach to the Constitution is, I like a plain read of the Constitution, coupled with an understanding, some conceptual understanding at least of what the founding fathers had intended to effect with their words, right? And if you look at texts written in the 18th century, you realize how wonderfully plain the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, for example, are, how plainly they are written. This is not, you look at it, it's not ye olde English, and we didn't have to do an NIS version of the Bible, of the King James Bible, so us rubes can read and understand it. The Constitution is written in a way where if you're literate, you can understand what's being said. And it also is not particularly wordy. And this is what makes the Constitution very, very brilliant. So when it comes to the Second Amendment, you have the right to bear arms. And this amendment now is a subject of great debate because John Paul Stevens, retired Supreme Court justice and leftist fool, wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times Tuesday, the 27th. Why was the 27th at any rate? Was that Tuesday, Robbie? Doesn't matter. Anyway, the op-ed piece that he wrote was, well, it says, look, we got to do away in order to actually effectuate meaningful gun control. We need to do away with the Second Amendment. And all of a sudden, this enormous debate in our various cable channels and newspapers, everything, it has developed about, whoa. It says, what does he mean? How does he mean? And I love what it means, because what it means to me is, for as long as we have the Second Amendment, David Hogg and his band of fools ain't getting nothing. I want to be able to speak in their language, you know, say like hip hop and all that stuff. You ain't getting nothing. It's all blah, 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 blah. And you might as well be speaking a foreign language. None of what you're saying matters at all. Because the Second Amendment does fulfill its role. Now, here's what John Paul Stevens wrote in the article in part. And this is a quote. For over 200 years after the adoption of the Second Amendment, it was uniformly understood as not placing any limit on either federal or state authority to enact gun control. And in other words, this means in order to clear some kind of path for sweeping gun control restrictions, you know, activists need to move for a constitutional amendment that would repeal the Second Amendment. And I'm going to say this. The protection in the Second Amendment, the right to possess and use guns for non-military purpose like hunting and personal self-defense, this is how liberals describe it. It's really about just hunting. It's about hunting. It's about personal defense, you know, like you just maybe have a handgun, but you don't. That's why you do not need an AK-47. It's why you do not need an AR-15 or any gun that looks scary, that it might look military-like. But the problem with this is, and again, getting into the substance of it, and I'll do this after the break. The problem is that this reading of the Second Amendment is absolutely dead wrong and has been overturned, has been established to be dead wrong. And I'll explain what I mean after the break here. I've run a little bit long. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Gun control, the issue du jour, brought in part into our view because of the Parkland High School shooting and all these kids that are shouting about gun control and all the things that we need to do now. Do something, and putting price tags on Marco Rubio for, you know, this. I don't know. Did you see that? Particularly distasteful, I guess, saying how much money Marco Rubio took for each life lost at Parkland, referencing money he had received from the NRA. All right, I get it. They don't want guns. Now they're running into a headwind because we've got this pesky constitutional amendment in the Bill of Rights that says thou shalt have guns. And The way to of course fix this, according to one of our learned legal luminaries, retired Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, is to repeal the Second Amendment. And I read a quote from his article. He said, for over 200 years after the adoption of the Second Amendment, it was uniformly understood as not placing any limit on either federal or state authority in that gun control. Uniformly understood as not placing any limit on either federal or state authority. So, in other words, according to him, you know, it doesn't place limits on the feds or on state authorities to place, you know, to control guns in some way, shape, or form. So, and that is to some extent true, by the way, right? A state, for example, like California, can decide, okay, we can ban high capacity magazines. It doesn't interfere in such a way with the Second Amendment, and it's been allowed to exist. You can ban certain types of guns and still allow the Second Amendment to take in place. What you can't do is ban gun ownership and the possession of firearms outright, and that was what the Heller case was about. And that's really the end game, right? You got to understand that they're right now, politically, if you read this, if you read in between the lines, you don't even have to do that. You see, now they're stating their end game is to get rid of the Second Amendment because it's not enough. The way I read what Stevens is saying is it's not enough to just allow the feds and allow states to have some to place some limits on gun ownership. No, we need gun bans. We need gun confiscations. And you're not going to do that with this pesky Second Amendment. Okay, so let's talk about it. There is a guy, his name was St. George Tucker, back in 1803, wrote a view of the Constitution of the United States. This actually ought to be the con law textbook, not the one written by Erwin Chemerinsky. This is the one that ought to be in taught in law schools. And because he's an interesting guy, I mean, he was a veteran of the Revolutionary War. He was a colleague of James Madison. He was, and here's what he writes about the Second Amendment. This is a contemporary read, right? This is a contemporary analysis. Quote unquote, "This may be considered as the true palladium of liberty. The right of self-defense is the first law of nature." And that's it. I mean, that's what the founders intended. They also were very concerned, right? If you look at the contemporary accounts, they were very concerned about the king, about the development of a strong central authority. And they wanted, you know, they figured one way of protecting against total tyranny is to allow an armed citizenry to be able to stand up for itself. And this is, they're just not going to get around to this. So, you know, you realize that in order to pass a constitutional amendment, I mean, you got to get it ratified through all this. You got to go to every single state and have a vote. It's not going to happen. It is a pipe dream. So that's an important point, but it does peel back the curtain on the left's agenda. And let's get into that, because we've got some great clips here of stupid things Democrats say. And also, I know. Stevens has gotten so many cases wrong, dead wrong, and cases that would surprise you, actually. I may talk about those, too, when we come back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation. So a lot of play given to the Justice John Paul Stevens op-ed piece about abolishing the Second Amendment. Let me tell you some of the things that he's gotten wrong, just so you kind of understand. If you don't follow the Supreme Court, I get it. I just want to give some context to how crazy this guy is. So he dissented, meaning he opposed Texas v. Johnson, which is the flag burning case. All right. Now, I don't like burning the American flag. I'm very respectful when it comes to the flag. But I also just believe in the Constitution, and it's a freedom of expression thing. It's a First Amendment right. Do you see how if you're going to be a constitutionalist, you have to defend the rights of someone whom you profoundly disagree with? Now, he wasn't on the court for the Snyder v. Phelps case, but he said he would have agreed with the dissent in that case. Do you remember which one this is? This is the Westboro Baptist Church case. Again, very sick and distasteful. You've got these Westboro Baptist freaks going to military funerals and holding up signs that are vile, disrupting really, very sad and tragic, already tragic events. It's horrid. And yes, there is a very special place in hell, no matter how many times the Pope now tells us there is no hell. There's a very special place in hell for people who do that, who protest at somebody's funeral. But it's a First Amendment issue. If they're not trespassing, if they are following whatever reasonable restrictions are placed on them, they have a right to express themselves. You have to be okay if you want the First Amendment for you, if you want the right to speak your mind, then you have to respect the right of others to speak their mind. I was very disappointed, actually, Samuel Alito for writing the dissent on that case. Anyway, Oh, Kelo. Yeah, don't let me. Kelo v. New London. That is, you start reading that case in law school and you're just like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? This is eminent domain. Eminent domain is a permitted constitutional concept which gives the government the right to take your private property. It's a taking, right? And it's in the takings clause. It allows you to take private property for public use. And it was always intended for the guy, the holdout, right? You've got the guy who has the house and it's the last remaining house to build a freeway. And the government can come in and say, sorry, pal, we're taking your house, but here's fair market value. And now we're going to build our freeway because the necessity for that freeway and the benefit far outweighs your personal right as a property owner. Now, I agree with that in part because it's in the Constitution, but it's also conceptually. In the Czech Republic, they don't have this, and they were building a freeway, and they still can't finish the freaking freeway because somebody has a house in literally a parcel of land, and this woman won't sell. And every time I'm getting off the freeway, I'm like, you know, giving that parcel the finger because, anyway, you get my point. But this Kelo case was not that fact pattern. It was a real estate developer went buddy-buddy with the city, okay, and the city of New London. And the developer said, yeah, I really want to tear down these mom-and-pop stores over here and some of these houses and build a shopping center. That's what I think this town needs. And, of course, the residents and owners, landowners sued and went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And Supreme Court said it can be a taking, a legitimate taking, because, wait for it, this new development is going to produce tax revenue. And that tax revenue is going to benefit the town's people, et cetera, et cetera. So broad. Such a stretch. Absolutely not what our founding fathers intended. You could go back to St. George Tucker's view of the Constitution. You're not going to find anything in there about these kind of broad benefits. It was very specific. Okay. Justice John Paul Stevens. Total fool. Anyway, speaking of total fools, now the left is going, whoa, we're not talking about getting rid of the Second Amendment. That was just John Paul Stevens. Here is Mr. Cuomo, CNN, Christopher Cuomo, CNN's resident dummy. And here is what he said about this week.
You got the president of the United States this morning tweeting that the Second Amendment will never be repealed. We must have more Who's calling for a repeal of the Second Amendment?
Justice Stevens did. But
he did not. It was in the context of a conversation about the fastest route to legal change. And of course, if you didn't have a Second Amendment, you wouldn't have Heller. It would be easier to change the laws. He's not a politician. He's not in office. He's not the head of any kind of significant group. It's a boogeyman.
That does not breed unity.
It's a boogeyman. And you know it.
It does not breed unity. It's a boogeyman. Yeah. Okay. I think that's right. That's why the New York Times, the mouthpiece of the American left, gave it prominent billing in an op-ed section. Yeah, because it just a boogeyman. Yeah. Boogeymen do not make it into giant big spreads in the New York Times. Trust me on that. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I always hate when the last segment comes around because I feel like I've just gotten loosened up. I'm ready. I've got my talking shoes on. And, these boots were meant for talking. Sam Rachofsky, Sam Nation. Buck Sexton on Fox News, talking in a gun panel with Brett Baer on Wednesday, actually answered some of this nonsense that Cuomo was putting out there. This Justice Stevens banning. It's like, we're not about banning this. We don't want to get rid of the Second Amendment. We don't want to take people's guns. We just want to clip that gun ownership a little bit and put in common sense reforms. Listen to what Buck Sexton says, and especially in particular the ending, because this is what was my direct answer to all this nonsense put out there by these student protesters, and especially my answer to the style of the debate.
We keep seeing instances like this with very prominent voices from the left or from the Democrat Party who say what we all think they actually believe, which is that they would like there to be, if not an outright ban, something very close to a ban. We often hear about incremental changes. People will talk about common sense gun reforms, and then there won't be a consensus on what those reforms would be. Brett, well, if they're so obvious and so common sense, one would think that they could all get on the same sheet of music. I walked through one of these protest marches in New York over the weekend, and there were signs about banning AR-15s. There was a sign that I saw that said Trump kills kids.
See, this is it. You want to build bridges? You want to be consensus building? What did Sean Penn say? You feel like there are reasonable people who are doing this with such sobriety, using such articulate words, in such an inclusionary way. Nothing inclusionary about saying, you know, Trump kills kids. This is, you know, this is like trying to come up with abortion restrictions or some common ground there and saying Obama kills kids, kills fetuses. Not helpful. And it doesn't breed unity, right? Chris Cuomo wants to say it's all about unity. God, Democrats are so full of crap. These guys, man, I mean, we're all born, most of us, fortunately, with, you know, depending on the setup, with the same orifices. It's just that, you know, Democrats don't know when they find themselves in their own orifices. That's the problem. The debate here has to be constitutionally based. That's my word on it. And the problem is, it's a slippery slope when you start to define different types of guns and what they do. You can place individual rights restricted based on some definable criteria. And I think that's the better, more common sense approach here. We can all agree that it's probably a pretty bad idea to hand people rifles when they leave the insane asylum. Oh, you're leaving Bellevue today. Here's a rifle. No. Not a good plan. But when you're, you know, when you're like, when you, your entire discussion is about that gun looks spooky. Well, you've lost me there, pal. Because I know guns. And when a gun's pointed at me, all guns look spooky, okay? Very difficult to draw. What matters to me is who's pointing the gun at me. That's the issue. You got to think about it in those terms. Very practical breakdown, right? All right. Man, there's stuff I still wanted to get to and have not. How does this happen? Okay, well, I guess you're just going to have to tune in next week because we'll have more. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, have a wonderful Easter. I love all of you. So grateful to have you here on the program. And I'll see you next week.